Rob's got Cam Berg on for another accelerated diagnostic protocol. These guys have tackled chest pain, atrial fibrillation, TIA, and
this time we are going to tackle headaches, not the mild headache or the migraine. We're not talking about treatment. We're talking about ruling out subarachnoid hemorrhage, taking all we've learned in the past several years and turning it into clinical practice.
The ADP that Cam is going to discuss is predicated upon the Perry article. Sensitivity of computed tomography performed within 6 hours of onset of headache for diagnosis of subarachnoid hemorrhage, prospective cohort study, and that was published in the BMJ back in 2011. Rob discussed a recent meta-analysis on the same topic back in January with Salim Rezai, and we've covered this elsewhere on MRAP. The bottom line from that study was that CT performed within 6 hours on non-traumatic headache patients was nearly 100% sensitive and 100% specific for the diagnosis of subarachnoid hemorrhage. The 6-hour mark is important because of the changes blood undergoes with time.
Acute blood on a CT is bright, and resolving blood gradually becomes isodense, which makes it harder and harder to see if it's in the subarachnoid space. So that, of course, limits the accuracy of non-contrast head CT for subarachnoid as time progressed. Now, the CT scanners that were used by Perry were not particularly advanced, so these weren't like, you know, super modern dual detector scanners. They were what are called third generation CT scanners. Additionally, the radiologists who were interpreting the images were just regular diagnostic radiology attendings. So they weren't neuroradiologists, but similarly, they were not radiology residents, nor were they ED doctors.
But you know what? There's still naysayers. I mean, there's still some people who feel we're not there. Don't believe it. Don't believe it. Still need to LP everyone with a negative CT, no matter when you get it, 1 second or 1 day after the headache. So do you believe the literature? And what's your take on the true sensitivity of the CT?
Overall, I believe the literature. I'm hesitant to agree with Perry that the sensitivity is 100%. But I think if you look at these trials in aggregate, and the Perry trial is, of course, the best of them, the sensitivity certainly exceeds 99%. And it's probably on the order of 99.9%, or meaning you're going to miss perhaps 1 in 1,000. And I think we'll get into, in a few minutes, why I think that that is good enough.
Well, let's jump into the ADP. So patient comes into your emergency department. They have a presentation concerning for subarachnoid hemorrhage. So you have to enter this ADP somehow. Is that concern for subarachnoid based on gestalt, or do you list criteria like, okay, here are the patients who we will enter into this ADP?
The eligibility for the ADP is gestalt. It's people in whom you are worried about subarachnoid. I mean, we are experts in differential diagnoses, and there's lots of things, of course, that we think about when patients present with an undifferentiated headache. Subarachnoid hemorrhage is always at the top of the list, but it's not the only emergent rule out. I mean, these people could have meningitis or could have a stroke or could have any of a number of other dangerous things. So this ADP applies to patients in whom the provider is concerned about subarachnoid hemorrhage already.
You're concerned about subarachnoid hemorrhage, patient enters the ADP. The first decision point after they've entered is actually a decision instrument, the Ottawa subarachnoid rule. And it, looking at the ADP, it seems like you're using kind of like the PERC rule in that if it's negative, if the Ottawa subarachnoid rule is negative, you do no further workup. If it's positive, they get a non-con head CT.
To me, this Ottawa subarachnoid hemorrhage rule is actually one of the more exciting pieces of literature that's come out in the last few years.
That decision instrument came out of another Perry article, Clinical Decision Rules to Rule Out Subarachnoid Hemorrhage for Acute Headache, and that was published in JAMA back in 2013. And again, we reviewed this back in the paper chase in May 2015. That article took the patients from the prior paper and used them to derive 3 decision instruments to help risk stratify patients with headaches.
And so the elements of this rule, I mean, you can look them up on MDCalc, but they're pretty easy to remember, or at least kind of keep in mind. So they are age of greater than 39, so older patients are higher risk. It's the presence of neck symptoms, and that's defined as neck pain, neck stiffness, or limited flexion on your exam. A witness loss of consciousness, which means that a headache plus syncope. Exertional onset to the headache, so headache occurring during vigorous physical activity. And finally, a true thunderclap headache, which is defined for this purposes as a headache reaching its maximum intensity instantaneously or within less than 60 seconds. And what Perry showed is the absence of any of these essentially rules out subarachnoid hemorrhage. And this is designed to be a one-way test a la the PERC rule. It's designed to rule out disease when you already suspect subarachnoid hemorrhage. And that's probably the most important thing about this and the most important thing to the PERC rule as well. These are not intended to be screening tests. So you don't just say, oh, this patient has a headache, the patient fails the Ottawa score, therefore we have to do everything else. Just like we shouldn't use the PERC score that way when we're considering PE rule out. But if you're concerned about subarachnoid hemorrhage and your patient passes the Ottawa rule, has none of those five things, then you're almost certainly done thinking about subarachnoid hemorrhage. So Perry specifically derived this rule and then he prospectively validated it, showing that it was 100% sensitive, that it really didn't miss any of the subarachnoid bleeds. And the rule has now been validated by at least two other external sites, which is pretty promising. So like most scores, I think we may end up seeing that its performance degrades slightly as we subject it to more and more external analysis. But at least at the moment, it appears to be very promising. I think it's ready for use. And if you don't agree, these are at least things that you should think about in your medical decision making.
As Rob mentioned earlier, there are still people who don't buy all this literature and think that an LP should still be performed on all patients after the non-con head CT. One more article we should mention on this topic was a recent publication from Chris Carpenter in Academic Emergency Medicine entitled Spontaneous Subarachnoid Hemorrhage, a systematic review and meta-analysis describing the diagnostic accuracy of history, physical exam, imaging, and lumbar puncture with an exploration of test thresholds. The bottom line on this article was that CT within 6 hours was extremely good for ruling out subarachnoid hemorrhage, and that an LP after CT should only be performed in patients with a pre-CT probability of greater than 20% for subarachnoid hemorrhage, given the test characteristics of LP. Now, as a comparison, the set of patients in the original Perry article from 2011 had a pre-CT probability of subarachnoid hemorrhage of about 7.7%. So 20% would be a very high-risk group. Okay, let's get back to Rob and Cam and that ADP.
You're considering subarachnoid, but this decision instrument says the risk is extremely low. I mean, of course, there's myriad other causes of headache, all the other bad stuff. But for subarachnoid, in effect, ruled out.
I agree. I don't think you've ruled out everything bad, but I think you have, practically speaking, ruled out subarachnoid hemorrhage.
All right. So if the rule is positive, they go for a CT. Obviously, if the CT is positive, they've ruled in for subarachnoid hemorrhage. But if it's negative and the symptoms started under 6 hours ago, you're saying ruled out, done. You are now ruled out for subarachnoid.
Yes. I think you're done.
The caveat on that yes, as with all protocols, all ADPs, is that you still have to be a doctor. If something about the patient in front of you makes you think that they are at a higher risk than the usual patient for subarachnoid hemorrhage, you may still want to pursue that LP.
But for the average patient, this is the way I think you should go. I really do think that the 6-hour head CT data is extremely strong. Back to Perry, he and his collaborators were unbelievably diligent about follow-up. And I do believe, Perry, that it does not appear that any of their negative head CTs who were discharged home ended up suffering from a missed subarachnoid.
Or at least an aneurysmal subarachnoid, because they're thinking that maybe the paramesencephalic or the venous bleeds or whatever that are not so serious, they're going to be much less likely to die.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Just as a refresher, about 90% of subarachnoid hemorrhage is aneurysmal in nature, and these are the ones that we want to catch because they've got a high morbidity and mortality associated with them. The other 10% are these paramesencephalic bleeds that aren't nearly as dangerous from the morbidity mortality perspective and actually may not be consequential if missed.
Well, we know from subsequent data that came after the main Perry study that there is actually still a very small risk of having a subarachnoid hemorrhage with a negative CT within 6 hours of headache onset, like 1 in 1,000, as you mentioned earlier. Do you discuss that with the patient? Do you consider that small enough that you don't even want to have the discussion? It's like, you know what, just effectively ruled out.
I believe, practically speaking, you have effectively ruled it out. But I do like to share information with patients if they're the kind of worried patients who want all this information. So I think you have to use your kind of patient litmus test to figure out how much can this patient deal with right now. So in general, I would say something like...
Wake up, MRAP listeners. If you tuned out for a minute, this is one of the really vital parts that you want to focus on. Cam is about to share his script for discussing the post-CT risk with a patient.
Based on the results of your test today, it appears extremely unlikely that you're suffering from a bleeding aneurysm. To the best of our knowledge, the possibility is approximately 1 in 1,000 or less. To be 100% certain, the next thing we would need to do is a more invasive test, like a spinal tap. At this point, I would not recommend this test, but I'm happy to perform it if you remain worried. And you know, the real problem with LP, Rob, isn't so much the time or the convenience or the complications, which truthfully are negligible, but it's the performance characteristics. So LP is a bad test because it has a very high incidence of false positives. Basically, if you look at the literature, about 15% of emergency LPs have red cells due to trauma. So about 15% of these are going to be false positives. Now, if you combine this feature with a very low prevalence of disease, you get some really crazy likelihood ratios. So for example, I think that the likelihood of a true positive LP in that initial 6-hour window. So hypothetically, you have a patient comes in with a headache, you get a head CT, it's negative, it's been less than 6 hours, and you still decide to do an LP, and now your LP is positive because it's got a bunch of red cells. The likelihood of that being a true positive is less than 1 in 200. 99.5% of the time, that is a false positive test. And so that's a really difficult likelihood ratio for any of us to internalize, let alone patients.
This goes back to exactly what Carpenter discussed in his article. If your pretest probability wasn't too high, around that 5 to 10% mark, an LP after a negative CT performed within 6 hours is unlikely to benefit the patient and more likely to cause harm by additional testing.
We're going to get into a different cohort of patients. The CT is negative, but the symptoms started over 6 hours ago.
There is, unfortunately, a fundamental difference in the performance of CT after 6 hours or so. Instead of being close to 100% sensitive, it's more like 90% sensitive, which is not nearly high enough.
So patient with concerning headache story for subarachnoid hemorrhage, but symptoms started greater than 6 hours prior, would get a non-con head CT. And if that was negative, move on to an LP. But in order to understand the ADP, we need to understand what constitutes a positive LP. Is it red cells in tube 1, xanthochromia, and what about clearing of red cells?
When you spend some time looking into evidence, not surprisingly, the best evidence comes from Perry and his same collaborators. So in the context of their larger headache work, Perry prospectively evaluated the diagnostic performance of different red cell cutoffs. And he concluded that the ideal red cell cutoff, so we want, of course, a number at which we maintain 100% sensitivity, but we also improve our specificity. And the definition that he recommends and that we have adopted is either xanthochromia as defined by colorimetric analysis, which literally just means you look at the tube next to something white, and if it appears discolored, it's positive, or more than 2,000 red cells in the tube with the fewest red cells, which is, of course, usually the final tube. These are the cutoffs we recommend, either xanthochromia or more than 2,000 red cells.
And you always hear the apocryphal tale of, man, I saw a subarachnoid hemorrhage patient, 100 red cells in the tube. It was just, I almost sent him home.
Yeah, well, maybe. I think that the evidence suggests that that is a vanishingly rare phenomenon, but I'm sure it is possible, just like all things are.
The question that comes up is, why not just do a CTA before the LP? Because what are we worried about? Worried about aneurysmal subarachnoid hemorrhage, worried about aneurysms. And there's definitely a practice pattern when people worry about a subarachnoid, do a CT and a CTA of the cerebral vessels. That's your initial workup. If both of those are negative, I think that there's a group of folks not doing the LP.
So I understand how tempting it is to use advanced imaging in the place of a lumbar puncture. The problem, once again, is this phenomenon of false positivity. So between 2 and 5% of the population have a incidental cerebral aneurysm.
There's one more thing to worry about. 2 to 5% of us are walking around with a ticking time bomb in our heads. Not only that, the rate increases as we get older. The answer to your question is that yes, it is a safe time to panic right now. Wait, I shouldn't panic? This isn't that scary?
There's no evidence that detection or treatment of these in asymptomatic populations confers a benefit. Actually, it appears that when we detect them, we intervene on them, and this leads to increased complications and the sequelae of neurosurgical procedures.
Oh, thank God. All right, everyone, you can stand down from your panicked outburst. Cam has set it all straight.
So a few small ED trials have specifically looked at this approach. Non-con CT, if negative, CT angiogram of the brain, and the data does not appear to be promising. First of all, it's costly to do that. Secondly, it requires a large amount of radiation. And thirdly, there's really no proof that it helps our patients. So this may end up being something that we prove useful in the coming months or years. But at present, I definitely think the next test is an LP.
All right, we've done the LP and we get back 25,000 red cells and positive xanthochromia, a clearly positive lumbar puncture. Now what?
So this, Rob, is I think when you want to do that CT angiogram. Remember that the majority of positive LPs are actually false positives. You want a confirmatory test to show that there's an aneurysm that could be bleeding. So you do that LP, the LP is positive, now you get your CT angiogram of the brain. And that's really your confirmatory study.
All right, you never come unprepared. You never come with an ADP without some numbers in your pocket. So what has happened?
Yeah, we got to prove stuff, right?
Although I'll tell you, man, you said some fancy words, and I mean, I'm a believer, but what's happened? What's happened since you rolled this out?
All right. So we rolled out this ADP just a few months ago, but so far it's been good. I mean, not surprisingly, we see lots of headache patients, so we've had the ability to test it a few times. To date, we have decreased our LP utilization in patients with headache by about 30%. We have also decreased length of stay in headache workup by about 1 hour. So both of those are good. Most importantly, I think we're all on the same page and we're all doing the same thing. We're giving the patients the same message. The radiologists know what to expect and our consultants are in agreement. Neurosurgery, specifically, is on the same page with us. I mean, they agree with all of this. They agree with the cutoffs. You score first, you CT next, you LP next, and you CT angiogram the brain finally. Now remember, and we will of course attach the particular ADP, but you can rule out at any step. If you pass the score, you're done. If you have a negative CT in 6 hours, you're done. If you got a negative LP, you're done. And then if you have a negative CT cerebral angiogram, you're done. So you can rule out at any step, but you can rule in during two of the steps, and those are the CTs. A non-con CT that's positive is positive, and a CT cerebral angiogram that's positive with that positive LP is real deal as well. And so I really just think it helps because we're all in agreement about what used to be a challenging diagnostic process.
All right. Thanks again, Cam.
As with all ADPs we've discussed in the past, you want to create a system that your consultants are on board with as well. You don't want to have a case fall through the cracks and then have your neurosurgeon or radiologist telling you that your approach makes no sense. Get all the players involved at the table to do this right. And once again, remember that at any point, if your gut, your gestalt, your experience tells you to step outside of the protocol and go further, that's okay. That's what we train and practice for.